we have the people of Israel who have a recently appointed king. Now, God didn't want these Israelites to have a king. God wanted to be their king. But these people had a hard time following a God that they couldn't see. Can anybody relate? They had a hard time following somebody that they just couldn't see. And so they said, God, you're going to have to help us out. We want a king. We need you to pick a man that we can follow. Because they just didn't have the faith for it. And so God, listen to this, God says, okay. And he appoints a king. God does something that was against his perfect will because his people asked for it. So be careful what you ask for. So at this point in the story, we have a gentleman named Saul who was appointed as king. And he ended up rebelling against God and making some poor choices. And we're not going to get into that this morning. You can read through it yourself if you wish. But God gets to a point where he needs to replace Saul. He needs to find a new man. And so if you're there with me in 1 Samuel chapter 13, we're going to read verses 13 and 14. 1 Samuel 13, verses 13 and 14. And Samuel said to Saul, King Saul, "You have done foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, with which he commanded you. For then the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. But now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought out a man after his own heart. And the Lord has commanded him to be prince or leader over his people because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you." So when God goes to look for a new leader, what's his criteria? What does he look for? He says that the Lord sought for a man after his own heart. When it's election season in Canada, what sort of a criteria do we have for our leaders, for our new prime minister? What's our list of things? They need to be smart, they need to be intelligent, they need to have a track record of qualifications and a history of success in politics, and they need to be able to speak French, which is a ridiculous expectation. Just kidding. You know, they need to have all of these things in order to qualify to lead this great nation. And I'm not saying that that's a bad criteria. I'm just saying notice the difference between our criteria and God's. God's criteria is, are you after my heart? Are you after my heart? So we look at a variety of characteristics. We look at how they can perform under pressure. What's their stance on illegal immigration? What are they going to do about debt reduction? We've got all these questions. And God just sort of puts all of the details aside and wants to know, yeah, but where's your heart? What is this? In what state is your heart? And I don't mean Philadelphia or Illinois. What is the state of your heart? We've all got questions, but I'm going to propose to you this morning, the only thing that really matters is your heart. And this morning, we're going to start a series called Hungry Hearts. And as we continue in this story, in 1 Samuel, we read that God sends a man named Samuel to the house of Jesse. And God tells Samuel that one of Jesse's sons is going to be this new leader, is going to be this new king. And so Samuel obeys King Saul. He heads down to the house of a man named Jesse. And you can flip over a few chapters into 1 Samuel chapter 16. 1 Samuel chapter 16. And so he goes to the house of Jesse, and he asks Jesse to bring out all of his sons. Bring out all of your sons here before me. He says, we're gonna go and sacrifice to God together. So bring all of your sons out. So Jesse brings out his sons, come out, and it doesn't take but the first guy to come across Samuel's eyes. And he goes, this has to be the Lord's choice. That he sees Eliab, the firstborn of Jesse, and he goes, this is it. We don't need to look any further. Look at this guy. But you know, we think a little bit differently than God. At least every once in a while. So in verse 7 of 1 Samuel 16, we read this. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord sees not as man sees. See, man looks at the outward appearance. But the Lord looks at the heart. And so, okay, no to the first choice, no to Eliab. So he goes down the line, going down, different son coming to see, and the Lord says, nope, that's not him, nope, that's not him, nope, that's not him. He gets through all of Jesse's sons that have been brought before Samuel, and he's like, well, do you have any other sons? He says, well, yeah, I've got David, but he's just the runt of the litter. You know, he's out with the sheep. Okay? Now picture this. Samuel said, Jesse, I need to meet all of your sons. And this is how not in Jesse's mind his son David is. He doesn't even go and get him. Oh, you really meant all of my? I thought you just meant like all of the qualified ones. He doesn't even think to bring out David. So this is where David is in Jesse's mind. Not that he doesn't love him as a son. He just didn't even think that Samuel would have any use for this young boy. And so, yeah, Jesse goes and brings out David from the field. See, if God, when he looks at people, sees the heart, that's what really matters. And it should be the state of our hearts that have the importance in life, not our outward appearance. So what is the state of our heart? When he looks at your heart, what does he see? So Samuel goes through and he eventually brings out David. And here's David. He comes out and we read 1 Samuel chapter 16, down in verse 12. He sent and brought him in, who's David. Now he was already and had beautiful eyes and was handsome. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is he. Verse 13, then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brothers. And the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon David from that day forward. David was the man that we read about in chapter 13 that God found. God said, I was searching for a man who was after my heart. And three, four chapters later, we find out this is who he was. This is who God found. And because David had a hunger for God, he had a heart after the heart of God, what happened? The Spirit of the Lord came upon him. See, we, in so many ways, we have this over-exaggerated theology about the sovereignty of God. And we just think that whatever God does is whatever God does. And yeah, I pray every once in a while because I think we're supposed to do it. But you know what? God's just going to do what God's going to do. And yet here, we meet a man named David. The Spirit of the Lord comes upon him, not just because the Spirit of the Lord wanted to, but because there was something in David's heart that drew the Spirit of the Lord upon him. Who made the first move here? David. He was hungry for God. And God responded. Spirit of the Lord rushed upon David from that day forward. What an experience that David had. And it wasn't because he was qualified by human stature. He was a 15-year-old boy. He was 5 foot something. Yeah, sure, said he was a handsome young man, but he was a teenager. But his hunger for God brought the Spirit closer to his life. We need to know that this is the truth for us here as well. Okay, so now, most of us here have been to an all-you-can-eat buffet. Anybody? Anybody been to an all-you-can-eat buffet? The Mandarin, for example. Okay, now, do you go to the Mandarin hungry or full? When you first go to the Mandarin, you just enter the doors, are you hungry or full? Hungry. If you go to a buffet full, you don't understand what a buffet is. The whole point of the buffet is to eat all you can eat. And so for some of you champions out there, I mean, you go all out. You skip, you know, breakfast and lunch that day. You get, you know, your extra, you know, you get your buffet pants. Anybody actually have buffet pants? Or your wife's old maternity pants? Anybody, right? There's people out there, they're just committed, right? They know, I'm going to get my money's worth out of this because the Mandarin keeps raising their prices, so I'm going to keep eating their food, right? So we're experienced all-you-can-eat eaters. We go to the buffet. We want to eat all that we can eat. Well, this morning I'm here to tell you that your spiritual life is like an all-you-can-eat buffet. Norm Bishop made a comment last week. It struck me. I was planning on talking about it this morning before he even said it. He said, you're as close to God as you want to be right now. Our spiritual life with God is like an all-you-can-eat buffet. How much of God do you want? How hungry are you? See, when you eat something at a buffet, you don't go, wow, that chicken was really good. I'm just going to try and remember this moment so that I can think about it later on. No, you go, I'm going to go get some more. I'm going to go fill up my plate again with some more of that chicken. And so our lives with God ought to be like a trip to the Mandarin. And all God's people said, amen. Amen. God created our physical stomachs to feel hunger so that we would know to feed it. And he gave our hearts a hunger unquenchable by anything but the presence and the power of God in our lives. There's nothing else that will satisfy. There's no amount of money or worldly possessions or relationships that will satisfy the hunger that's put in your heart. Our hunger is only satisfied by one thing. When you are hungry for chicken, steak will not do. When you are hungry for God, a bigger house won't do. We need to have the right answers to the appetites that God has created us with. And so when you continue on into 1 Samuel chapter 17, we continue in David's story. We next read about a time when the Israelites are faced with war. Okay, they're faced with certain war. And you've got the army of Israel standing on the valley of Elah, while the armies of the Philistines are standing up at a mountain and there's a valley in between. You've got the Israelites versus the Philistines. And there's going to be a battle. King Saul has got his army trained. They are there and ready to fight. But from the Philistines, a gentleman comes forward, 9.5 feet tall, covered in armor, going out with bronze breastplate and a spear, and he issues a challenge to the Israelites. He says, we don't need to have a big battle here. We don't need to lose all these lives. You just send me one person to fight me, and whoever wins this one-on-one fight will win the war. So this is the challenge that's brought out to the Israelites. So we read in 1 Samuel 17, verse 11, if you're following along with me, verse 11 says, when Saul and all the Israelites heard these words of the Philistines, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. So let me ask you, what was the state of their hearts? They were scared. They were fearful. They're looking at Goliath. They're looking at their strongest guy. They're going, this isn't going to end so well. They're filled with fear. That's the state of the king's heart. That's the state of the people's heart. They're looking towards their own strength and capability. And because of the fearful state of their heart, no one would answer Goliath's challenge. No one would go out to him. When you have fear in your heart, you're paralyzed. You don't dare take a step forward. And that's what these people are experiencing here. Their fear of what the enemy has in front of them paralyzes them. You know what it does? It puts a chain around you. It makes you feel like you can't move. Meanwhile, back at home, Jesse's waiting. He's wanting an update from many of his sons who are out at war. Eliah and some of the older sons are out. The three oldest sons are out at war. So he wants an update. And there's no Fox News app, there's no Facebook, you know, status to check to see what's going on in war. So he's got to send somebody to figure out. So he sends David with some food. Go bring some food to your brothers and give me an update. I want to know how the war is going. So Jesse sends David. Now, remember, David has been anointed to be the king, but he's not yet king. The Spirit of the Lord has come upon him. It is God's will for him to be king, but he's not yet king in this point in the story. So he goes down with his plate of cheese and crackers and goes to see what's going on with the battle. And so just when he gets there to where the Israelite army is, Goliath makes his daily approach. He's doing this day after day. We read he does it for 40 days in a row. Goliath comes out and issues this challenge. So little David hears the challenge. And then he overhears some other soldiers talking about the reward. They say, well, you know, whoever defeats Goliath, he's going to get great riches and the king's daughter. Okay? So let's remember the context. 15-year-old boy, great riches, king's daughter. David's listening. That was a joke. 15-year-old boy, great riches and the king's daughter usually don't find themselves in one sentence. So David's pretty interested, okay? So he starts asking her, he goes, wait. What did you just say the reward was? Oh, great riches, king's daughter. Oh. So he goes and he's talking to a few of the soldiers. And then one of his brothers, his oldest brother, overhears that David is asking around. And we pick it up in verse 28. Now Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he had spoke to the men. And Eliab's anger was kindled against David. And he said, why have you come down? With whom have you left those sheep in the wilderness? I know, listen to this, I know the presumption and the evil of your heart, for you've come down to see the battle. Now, what's the reality? The reality is that David is down there because he's being obedient to his father. his father said, I need you to go down there. I want an update. I want you to give some food to your siblings. That's the truth. And we already know a little bit about the state of his heart because he was a man after God. And yet his brother says, I know the evil of your heart. Notice how different our understanding of people's hearts are from God. Notice how we can think we know. This is his brother. He knows something about David. You could be so close to somebody and go, you know what, I know what's going on with their heart. I know that they're doing this and they're intentionally being nasty to me. You don't know, ladies and gentlemen. You don't know the heart. What Eliab sees in David could not be further from the truth. And so eventually news gets back to the king that David, this young boy named David's been asking around about the prize. You say, well, some guy is really interested. I mean, everyone else is going, yeah, this is what the guy gets, but no thank you. Everybody's taking a step back. David's going around trying to confirm, well, wait, so is anybody going to do this? I mean, what's going on here? So the king finds out that this boy is asking questions, and he brings him before him. He has David brought before him. And so we continue in verse 31. When the words that David spoke were heard, they repeated them before Saul, and he sent for him. Verse 32, and David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him, meaning Goliath. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. He's ushered into the presence of the king. He says, let no man's heart fail. Your servant will go. David's ready to fight. David's got a heart after God. And I'm sure the daughter's, king's daughter and the riches helped a little bit too. But David's got a heart after God. He's got a boldness underneath him that just says, I'm going to go and I'm willing to fight. And you hear the response that King Saul tells him. Words that would paralyze most people. You are not able. Anybody ever told you that before? This is the response. Not, David, I don't think this is a good idea. David, you're probably going to get hurt. David, you certainly aren't up for the challenge. You are not able. Just an absolute refusal. David, you're not going to be able to do it. And he goes on to say, you're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, and he's been a man of war since his youth. He's saying, listen, Goliath has been training since he was in diapers, and you're still wearing pull-ups. Okay? That's harsh, but it's kind of true. He's 15 years old. Goliath is way more qualified than he is. So he doesn't just look at David and say, listen, you're underqualified. He says, you're not qualified. There's nothing in you that screams qualification. But David, he doesn't stop there. He starts thinking, and he says, King Saul, there was this time when a lion, he came and he took one of my dad's sheep, and I'm supposed to be protecting the sheep. And so, I just chased the lion down, and I killed him, and I got the sheep back. He says, there's this other time that there was this bear. He came and stole the sheep. So I chased down the bear, and I killed him with my bare hands. No pun intended. Killed the bear with his bare hands. Yeah. I know. It's good. Okay. David's thinking, I've killed this lion, and I killed this bear. Now, I don't know about you, and I'm not, I wasn't a shepherd back in the days of this time, but my first reaction would not be to chase down the lion and the bear to get the sheep back. Okay, Christine and I were just, it was a part of our vacation, we were camping at a park called Kill Bear. Yeah, we signed up, we went to this place, we paid to go there. But it was called Kill Bear, okay? And we went there, and they had warnings everywhere about, if you see a bear, this is what you do, and make sure you hide all your coolers. Don't just put your cooler in your back seat, put it in your trunk. Even if they see it in your back seat, they will try to break into your car because they know where you keep food. It's in, those nice cooler bins. And so they've got signs everywhere. And, of course, we get stuck next to the group of guys who leave all their coolers out all week long. This is great. So I'm thinking if I saw a bear, if he came to get the cooler, I would be more likely to apply the scripture, if someone asks for your coat, give him your shirt too. I'd be like, hey, the water's over there, and don't forget the steaks. I would be more likely to help the bear than to chase him down to get my food back. Anybody can relate to that? But David's like, no, you know what? He took my sheep, and so I was just like, no, I'm going to go kill him and get the sheep back. And so David's got these experiences where he's had some victory in his life. And so he puts two and two together, and he's looking at King Saul, and he says this: "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." See, David's putting together some logic here. He's going, I did something that was kind of beyond my means over here, and then something else kind of happened that was beyond my means over here. So, you know, God's going to help me over here with something that's beyond my means too. He's had some victories in his life that he can look back at. Go, you know, God did it here. God did it here. God will do it here. This is the state of David's heart. And so the king says, oh, go for it. I mean, this guy is pretty intent on doing it. So the king gives him his blessing, gives him his permission. And then, of course, the king tries to give him his armor. He tries to help him out and put the armor onto David. And David's like, listen, I'm not used to wearing armor. I've never used armor before. It just didn't fit him. And so, but I mean, think of that opportunity. He had the opportunity to go before the enemy in the king's armor. And David's like, no, this isn't for me. It just doesn't fit right. You need to know. See, when you're chasing after God, if you have a hunger for God like David does and you're pursuing after God, you can't allow other people to try and tell you how to do that. And so you'll notice this morning and in the coming weeks that as I talk about having a hungry heart, I'm not going to tell you step by step by step by step what that looks like. Because you know what? My armor might not fit you. And the person beside you's armor won't fit you either. And so you can hear some stories and get some insight from different people, but you need to know your own armor. You need to know what fits you in terms of how to pursue God. So don't let someone tell you, you know what? Well, the way to pursue the heart of God is to read your Bible for this long and to pray for this long and to do. You got to find your own armor and chase after God. So here David is. He's about to go out there. You know, he's had these experiences where a lion and a bear has come. He's had victory. Now he's thinking the same can happen with Goliath. And because David was a man who had the hunger after God, pursuing after God, the Spirit of the Lord came upon him. That is a spiritual truth everywhere. James chapter 4, verse 8 says, "Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you." And I believe that every step, I mean, we read one portion of Scripture where it said the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon David. But I believe, based upon James 4:8 and countless other Scriptures, that every time you take a step towards God, the Spirit of God takes another step towards you. Every time that you pursue God and step out in a new area that you didn't think you'd be able to do, the Spirit of God takes another step closer to you. This is a spiritual truth, whether you're aware of it or not, whether you believe in Jesus or not. Every step that you take, either towards or away from God, God responds. He responds to your heart's direction. So Saul lets David head on out to battle. David's not used to wearing the armor, so he goes out with 5 smooth stones he gets from a brookside and takes a sling with him. Let's read what happens, starting in verse 43. And the Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and to the beasts of the field." Then David said to this Philistine, "You come at me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied." And this day, David gives a little bit of a longer speech than Goliath. You notice that? Goliath's like, "You come over here and I'm going to feed your body to the birds." David just keeps going on and on. I love this. "And this day, the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down, and I'm going to cut off your head, and I'm going to give your dead bodies to the hosts of the Philistines, to the birds of the air, and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all of the earth may know that there is a God in Israel." A little bit more, you know, detail in that than the other one. A little bit grotesque. "I'm going to cut your head off and feed your body to the birds." Yeah. It's going to be great. "That all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all the assembly may know that the Lord saves, not with a sword, not with a spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our land." See, I don't know about you, but when I read through the story of David and Goliath, maybe this is the part that I struggle with the most, is going, how did David have like, I kind of understand he had the faith, you know, I'm going to do this. Kill the lion, kill the bear. I'm going to fight Goliath. But he here seems to have exact information on exactly how this is going to play out. And he's just, this is exactly what's going to happen. And he has such a faith in the end result. He's not just brave enough to fight. He's brave enough to declare that he's going to win. And this, and I'm assuming that you can relate to me, is maybe the most challenging part. We sort of take a step back. We go, wow, I know about taking a step of faith, but how about a step of faith in declaring, no, I'm not only going to fight, but I'm going to win. That's how David approaches his enemy. So David's out there fighting the battle. And he's got this absolute faith in what God will do. David was a hungry man. He had a hungry heart. It allowed him to have this confidence to overcome. So the Philistine comes up and approaches him. David whips a stone at Goliath. Stone hits him in the forehead. Goliath collapses to the floor. And just like David said, he went over. And then I don't know if maybe he didn't know at the time. I think it's kind of funny. He realizes he doesn't have a sword. He's like, oh, shoot. I told Goliath I was going to cut his head off. I need to be a man of my word. But I don't have a sword. So he takes Goliath's sword, which is probably good because he had a really big sword and he had a really big neck probably, right? So he takes Goliath's sword and he cuts his head off. And they win the battle. The Philistines flee. They start running away because they've got to know if there's something behind this. They see this tiny little 5-foot-nothing 15-year-old beat their 9.5-foot giant. Okay? They're frightened. And so they run and they win the battle. And I propose to you this morning, they won the battle, not because David was anything else, but a man with a hungry heart. That he wanted to draw closer to God. That he wanted to understand the presence of God. And that the Spirit of the Lord came upon him and enabled him to have victory against his enemies. So as you're here this morning, is your heart filled with faith in God moving among us? Is God's presence what's in your heart that you long to grow closer to God? Whether you know him or you've not known him or you've known him your whole life, is your desire to grow because you're hungry? See, it's easy to sit back and to wait thinking that, again, God is so sovereign that whatever happens, happens. And, you know, I'm just going to show up to church and God's got something planned maybe and whatever he does is just great. Or do you come to a gathering like this going, God, do something today. I pray that you would move in people's lives today. Like, what is the state of your heart when you come here this morning? What is the state of your heart when you sit down with your family at dinner and pray for the meal? What is the state of your heart when you enter into your workplace and pour that first cup of coffee? What is the state of your heart? Because I believe that hungry hearts bring change. I believe that when your heart is hungry for God, like you just sat down and you're waiting for round one at the Mandarin, if your heart is hungry for God in that same way, I believe that there's going to be change brought into your environment, into your circumstances. And yet, you know, there is a pretty significant difference. Pretty significant difference between a buffet and our pursuit of God. See, what happens after you have 2 or 3 or 4 or 7 or 12 plates at the Mandarin? Not that I can relate to that many, but you know. What happens? You get full. You go, wow, this is great. We're going to have to come back another time, but I'm done now. Ever been there? Okay. Maternity pants are filling in. Half your dessert's left on the plate. You got excited when you were up there, but now you're like, oh, I can't take another bite. You get to a point where you literally think you're going to explode. Yeah, we've all been there. That is where the analogy falls apart. And if our idea of pursuing God is that I'm hungry, so I'm gonna go to church and I'm gonna get full, and maybe I'll come back again next week. And yet, I think we have a buffet theology where we think about the good part that I talked about at the beginning, and we think about it all the way through to the end, where we go, you know what? I come to church to get full. I might not have to read my Bible for weeks after that service. It was so good. And yet maybe somehow we know that's wrong, but somewhere maybe that's crept into our thinking where we go, you know what, I'm full. I feel good. My hunger's gone now. That should never be the case with our pursuit of God. If anything, if you're going to picture this church, if you're going to picture your spiritual activity as a comparison with eating food, then this should be hors d'oeuvres. This should be an appetizer, where when you come into the presence of God, when you come into an atmosphere like this with fellow believers, when you come into worship and hearing from the Word, that you do not get full, but you get more hungry. That you go, oh wow, that was so good that I want more. See, we don't, our physical waistline is not the same as our spiritual waistline. There's no capacity. See, as long as we're on this earth, we are not as close to God as we can be. We have the Spirit of God living in us, and yet there's still this not yet reality where eventually we will be in the full manifest presence of God. That is a day that's coming. But as long as we're on this earth, we will never be full in the sense of, oh, you know what, I'm good. I just, you know, like, maybe we could talk again, God, in a few weeks, but I couldn't take any more right now. We would need to be more hungry, where we eat some spiritual meat, and we go, I want more. And we eat another spoonful, and we go, I want more, God. And we eat some more, and we go, I want more, God. Would you pour out more of your Spirit upon me? Because I'm not satisfied with just a little bit. I'm not satisfied with that. I want more. And I believe that was David's heart. And I believe that if our hearts can be a heart of David that never get filled but only want more, then we will see his presence come in a brand new way. See, we talk a lot about being a church who believes in God making his presence known here and believing in signs and wonders and healings. And I believe that we're going to see those happen more when our hearts are hungry for God. If we would be a people who are so hungry for God, not hungry for signs and wonders, hungry for God, not hungry for revival, but hungry for the reviver, not hungry for healing, but hungry for the healer, where we just pursue God, and I believe that he's going to respond to us just like he did to David. The Spirit of the Lord's going to rush upon us. The Spirit of the Lord's going to draw closer to us. Why? Because if you draw near to God, he'll draw near to you. You know, we use Revelation chapter 3, verse 20, in the Bible, we use it all the time at the end of services, maybe to invite people into a relationship with Jesus. Revelation chapter 3, verse 20 says this: Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in to him and eat with him, and he with me. And you've heard maybe this preached many times where the pastor or evangelist will say, listen, those of you who don't know Jesus, he's knocking at the door of your heart. And if you let him in, he'll come into your life and he'll enter into a relationship with you. And all of those things that pastor or evangelist has said are absolutely true. But they're not even remotely biblically correct in terms of the context of Revelation chapter 3, verse 20. There's nothing to do with that at all. Revelation chapter 3 is about a letter written to a church. He's not talking to a sinner who doesn't know Jesus. He's not talking to someone who's rejected God. He's talking to a church. And he says, Behold, I stand at the door and knock. Now, will somebody please tell me what's wrong with this picture? Jesus is knocking at the house of the door and nobody's let him in. Anybody see what's wrong with this picture here? Jesus isn't knocking on the hearts of sinners here. He's knocking at the doors of a church. And nobody's hearing his voice. He's saying, if you hear your voice and you open the door, then I'm going to come in and I'm going to have fellowship with you and I'm going to sup with you. I believe if we would be a church who would be so ready to open those doors, say, Jesus, be a part of our church. Jesus, be a part of our atmosphere. Be a part of our families. Then we would see more of him. But we would go deeper with him. That we would be a church where Jesus is welcome. Could you imagine being that church where Jesus is outside? Not showing up to service? Not because he doesn't want to be there. Not because he doesn't want to meet with you. But because there's no hungry hearts in the room. Are saying, Jesus, come in. Jesus, come in. See, those of you who have been a church, part of church for a while, you understand that when you enter into relationship with Jesus, the Spirit of the Lord comes into your life. And the Spirit of the Lord dwells in you. Your body is literally called a temple of the Holy Spirit. And so maybe you're not quite hearing me right when you hear what I'm talking about this morning. I'm not talking about the Spirit of the Lord, you know, maybe he's not in you anymore and he needs to come back and pay a visit. The Spirit of the Lord is in you, but there are greater measures of experiencing him. You can have dinner with your family. Nobody's talking. You could have dinner with your family and have open fellowship. There's a difference between indwelling and experiential indwelling. Because Jesus is knocking on the door to a church. And I'd love to say that Niagara Worship Center is a church that opens those doors. But you know what the truth is? It's not just up to the pastor. It's up to you. This is a body. This is a family. The faith that I have and the prayers that I pray, they're important. And I don't take that lightly. But we need to be on the same page here. We need to come together and pray together. Jesus, come with us this morning. Jesus, come and meet with us this morning. We are hungry for you, God. We are hungry for your presence. We are hungry for a fresh word from you. We are hungry for a fresh understanding of your Son, Jesus Christ, and what it meant that he died for me. We're hungry for more, and we're not going to stop till we experience you more. That would be the prayer of our heart. I'm hungry to draw closer to the presence of God this morning, but I need you to join me. I need you to be with me. I need you to join arms with me and say, yeah, you know, we're gonna pursue God. And this is really, you know what? This is something that the Spirit of the Lord is doing in my life right now, but it's something that he already told me. Remember the beginning of the year, we drew up these things and we said, wow, we're gonna be a church who's in pursuit of Jesus. It's the same message, folks. It's the same message that I'm preaching to myself, that we would be a church who is pursuing God. We're hungry for God, and the Spirit will come. And so I would just invite you to join me in this. Join your hearts with me. We would chase after God. And I believe that there's a stirring in the hearts of many of you here this morning who really click with what I'm talking about, who really see this story of David and Goliath and go, you know what? I've had some victories, but there's maybe a Goliath. I've had a lion and a bear, but there's this giant in front of me. And I've been focusing on the giant, but you know, I think maybe you're right. If I would just pursue God in a greater way, then the victory would come. And I would just invite those of you who have a stirring in your heart this morning to come on up to the front. And we just want to spend some time worshiping and praying with you. And we're gonna stay worshiping as a body this morning. The service isn't over. The back doors are still locked. The ushers aren't going to let you out. We're going to spend some time worshiping. So I invite you all to stand with me. And for those...